trading in Erica truth, this Solomon met with, even 100,000 myriad countless. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Before I continue, let's just pause for a second and consider the broad view, what it is that the Sandokai is about. Sandokai translates roughly as harmonizing the phenomenal with the real, harmonizing the appearance with the true reality, harmonizing the realm of difference and the realm of oneness within the Buddha nature. So when we consider what that means in our own personal lives, it means that the Sandokai is describing how we can get lost both in the realm of differences and how we can also get lost in a confused idea of oneness. And right at the beginning, near the beginning of the poem, the author points out that the problem is a problem of clinging. He hasn't stated it explicitly, but if we think about what we've talked about up till now, it's natural enough that there are differences. It's natural enough that we have preferences. It's natural enough that we have likes and dislikes. We get into trouble when we start demanding that things be the way we wish them to be and the things not be the way we don't wish them to be. And we can make those kind of demands in the material world, in the world of the senses. We can make those kind of demands in a misguided effort of a spiritual nature. And of course, the way Ramasi used to describe this was storming heaven, trying to storm heaven. We can be demanding in the realm of the senses, we can be demanding in the spiritual realm. And all that demandingness causes us to suffer. It causes us to create suffering. And all the while, the universe potters along, being just what it is. And as we're going to see in the next two verses that I'm going to discuss today, however things may appear to us, the universe is actually always doing quite well. And this is built into things because of the nature of the relationship between the all is different and the all is one. The next verse is, the properties of the four elements together draw just as a child returns into its mother. Now, to me this has been one of the most puzzling parts of the Sandokai, and this is an area in which I found particularly a translation by Thomas Cleary to help helpful. Not as a replacement for Master Jiyu's translation for me. You know, there could never be a replacement for any of her translations. But as an additional little window into meaning. And as Rim Master said so many times, the truth, the whole truth, and anything else that helps. Here's the way Cleary translates it. The four gross elements return to their own natures, like a baby taking to its mother. Now if we were to replace his their natures with the Buddha nature, and another scholar, a very well-known scholar named Blythe, I don't remember his first name, points out in a commentary on the Sandokai that the word nature here, he translates it singularly as nature rather than plural, refers to the Buddha nature. So, let's go back to our Master Jiyu's now. The properties of the four elements together draw. So what are the four elements? In China, the four elements are traditionally earth, air, fire, and water. It may be taking a bit of a liberty, but one could look on them as matter in various states, matter and energy in various states. It's kind of three material states and one energy. So, earth, solid, air, gas, water, liquid, fire, energy, matter and energy. Again, that may be taking a bit of a liberty, I really don't know. But it makes a kind of sense to me. So, let's look at the four elements and their properties is just another shorthand way of talking about the world of the difference, the world of our senses, the world of our daily experience. Because from the Chinese point of view, everything's made up of these elements, these four elements. So let's just say that this is a shorthanded way of saying all of our experience. So let's just do a little substitution. Instead of the properties of the four elements, we say all of our experience together draw just as a child returns to his mother. And let's add in, together draws to its own true nature. Just, and let's replace child with baby, like Cleary does, just as a baby returns to its mother. Oh, now what do we have here? Remember that all these metaphors we think of as analogies which are very important in Chinese thinking, in Chinese writing, in Chinese language. So, what if he were saying here, the relationship between our ordinary daily experience and the Buddha nature is like a little baby in its relationship to its mother. So how can we characterize the little baby in its relationship to its mother? OK, Okay, one of them, it's a relationship of great need. That baby would have had no existence without that mother. And again, think not just of a child of even 5 or 7, but think of a little baby just born. That baby is really still in a certain very visceral sense part of its mother, and they experience themselves as such. Mother experiences baby as part of herself. Baby experiences mother as part of itself. Okay, now let's take this and translate it over into what he's saying about the relationship of the world of the senses, the world of our ordinary daily experience, the world of our bodies and minds, to the eternal, to the Buddha nature. It's a relationship of utter dependency. There is no world of the senses without Buddha nature. The world of the senses, from instant to instant, from moment to moment, arises out of and returns back into Buddha nature. It's very, very helpful to read and meditate with Great Master Dogen's teaching in Uji, existence, time, being, time. In this regard, he really emphasizes this instantaneous nature of existence. Also, the scripture of great wisdom, the Heart Sutra, the immaculate emptiness that is the reality of the nature of all things, is all talking about the same basic thing here. From moment to moment, the whole world as we perceive it, the whole universe, arises out of and returns, draws back to Buddha nature, and in fact is never separate from it even for a moment. So let's go back to the mother and baby for a moment. Think about another aspect. You really need to mine these metaphors a bit. They're intentional. The metaphors are intentionally meant to be very rich metaphors. They're carefully chosen. What is the overwhelming experience of mother and baby? Hardwired in, it is an experience of love, of limitless love, of selfless love. Mothers will give their lives for their babies. Mothers separated from their babies feel bereft of an essential part of themselves. And the same is true of babies in relationship to their mother. Rurin Master used to say, the eternal, the Buddha nature, the cosmic Buddha is love beyond our wildest dreams. And this is literally true. There is no way to calculate the magnitude of the love of the Buddha nature for all of existence. And when we, as it were, the little babies, feel in any way separate from that love, it is a great anguish in our hearts. So we long to return to it. And we may get lost amongst the differences, so lost that we thrash around in our longing to return to it. We make all kinds of miseries mistaking external things for this one true spiritual refuge that we so long for. But when one day, when all conditions ripen, and we finally get it, that we have to turn within, that there is no external answer to the problem of that anguish in the heart, we have to turn within and take refuge truly in our own heart, then we have set foot on the path that leads not just to the cessation of suffering, but to that love which is beyond our wildest dreams. What is that mother for that little baby? It is, she is, an indescribable refuge, an indescribable source of consolation, security. And that is what the eternal is for each of us. These poems, they get clothed so often. The teachings often get clothed in this kind of philosophical, analytical jargon. It's a kind of technical language, the objects and their senses, the elements, etc., etc. It's talking about our relationship to the eternal. The suffering that we experience when we're not in harmony. The joy, the understanding, and the relief we experience when we come back into harmony with our true refuge. So now we're going to go through the same thing with another metaphor. And it's a little repeat, really. The same point made again with another metaphor. Goes on to say, lo, the heat of fire, the moving wind, the water wet, the earth all solid. The four elements and their properties. Now the senses that interact with them. Eyes to see, sounds heard and smells, upon the tongue the sour salty taste. There's other senses too, but that'll do. And then the point. And yet in each related thing, the related things, the senses and their objects, the objects composed of the elements, the senses also composed of the elements and interacting, producing experience. And yet in each related thing, as leaves grow from the root, end and beginning here return unto the source. Think of it, source is a capital S, and high and low are used respectively. So here we have another little recapped description of experience, the elements and the senses interacting. Just think of it, you can sweep all that away, and you can just think of it ordinary daily life. Ordinary daily life. Okay? So here we are rattling around in ordinary daily life. The world of the differences. We have lunch in half hour or so, get a little rest, go back to work. Lunch is different from rest, rest is different from work. Being hungry is different from resting, being fed is different from resting. Being hungry is different from being fatigued. All this bewildering multiplicity. There's all that multiplicity of experience. And yet within each aspect of it, within each related thing, with each aspect of our experience, as leaves grow from the root, think a minute, the root of a plant is underground generally. Okay, you don't see it. But everything that comes out of that root depends completely upon it. Without the root, there would be no other part of that plant. The leaves arise and pass season to season. Even within a season, leaves come into being and pass away. The root stays there, endlessly producing more life. And everything returns back to the root. The leaves fall, decay, return back to the root. So like this relationship between the leaves and the root, so is our relationship to the eternal. We are born here, we live our short life, we die. We are born out of the infinity of the eternal, the infinity of the immaculacy of nothingness, the infinity of love and wisdom. We are born out of that. We live our lives within it, whether we know it or not. And dependent utterly upon it, whether we know it or not. When we die, we return back to it, again, whether we know it or not. And so end and beginning, death and birth, birth and death, flow out of and return infinitely, eternally to the source. And all the distinctions we make, high and low, better and worse, richer and poorer, happier and sadder, are all just relative terms. Yes, there are the differences, and the reality of the differences, the true nature of the differences, is one and unborn and undying. Fortunately, this is not where the poem ends. There is further explanation that is needed. And so hopefully tomorrow we'll talk some more about it.